Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 2nd of January, 2015, and a very happy new year to all of our subscribers. I hope you had a great Christmas and other seasonal holidays. Okay, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick look at what actually happened during the last week. Well, there was a lot of quiet trading, but I would not underestimate the importance of some of that trading. And we saw certainly some profit taking coming in, not least in the U.S. market. We also saw Europe under a bit of pressure from that, well, continuing ongoing pressure, really from the ECB's, or in anticipation of the ECB's, further battle this month with Jens Wiedemann and the Bundesbank. Also concerns about the Russian situation. The market that's done the best overall has been China. And the A-shares have continued to power ahead. And we have also seen the Hong Kong Hang Seng Index pick up. And the Hang Seng, if you get it right, the Hang Seng China Enterprise Index, that's HSCEI, has had another strong gain, and as Owens pointed out in his written commentary here today, that's breaking up out of a big trading range, and it is dominated by financial shares, Chinese financial shares, and they're on very low multiples and under 10. It's eight something price earnings ratio, and the yield is around the 3.5, if not higher, mark when I last looked. So that remains certainly an interesting situation, not only here in the short term, but it's one that I expect to do really quite well over the longer term. And I wouldn't be too worried about that first pullback and reaction and consolidation by the China A-share index, because I think that'll just be a healthy development. And what I maintain is going to be a strong strong bull market overall. Now, also, what's done a little better in here this week is that India had lost a bit of its upward momentum earlier in December. And actually, I think we may have seen a little bit of shifting of investment positions by some people out of India towards China because of China's lower valuations. Well, I own both in my personal portfolio, and I have no hesitation in recommending both of those markets. I sometimes add the proviso, if you can stand the volatility, well, you know, there aren't that many markets that aren't volatile, or they'll certainly be volatile from time to time overall. But I think they're extremely attractive. I've given all the reasons previously, but in terms of China, a lot of people have been concerned about it, but the government is clearly supporting the bull market here right now, and that's got to be a favorable factor. And with India, we have this extraordinary governance change, which I've been talking about. I was talking about all last year and actually before. So those are my two top picks here. But there are a number of other interesting situations as well. And Japan remains one of them. I have a much smaller stake there. reflecting some of my own interests. The Asian region generally, I think, provided governance holds up and provided they don't get some of the smaller economies that have maybe borrowed a little bit too heavily in US dollars are not affected by that strong greenback overall. But speaking of the US economy, which remains very popular and justifiably so on many notes, not least I think the overall quantitative easing policy that the Fed had embarked on is clearly proved to be successful. The US economy is really up near the pole position in terms of economic recovery overall. On a longer term basis, points that I like so much are the USA's technology lead, which is very considerable. Other countries have the potential perhaps to catch up, China at some point, but the US is still, as I say, in a very, very strong position there. And that will help it enormously. The USA's energy position is another big advantage overall, which will help it. The US also has the most corporate autonomies, these big multinational corporations which have really outgrown their home domestic economies. And that's an interesting sector, but there are also some medium-term concerns in here. One of them would be is that investors are, well, I'll start by saying that as you know, that the US stock market is, mildly expensive. I don't think that's overstating the case at all. Mildly expensive relative to other stock markets around the globe. Now, there are two risks to earnings, and I think people might be a little bit too optimistic about the prospects and outlook for the US economy over the next year. And one factor that is bound to hurt a little bit is that the energy sector had been really the hot region in terms of both employment in the USA and also in terms of capital expenditure. Obviously, that's going to slow down somewhat. Now, additionally, the dollar remains on what is a very strong run, and it's another big gain in here today, taking the US dollar index, that's against the European currencies, was taking it up to over 91 in here today. So this has been a runaway major performer over the last several months, and no end that move is over. The Federal Reserve, I would say, is clearly not intervening. I haven't heard too much in the way of corporate protests on the part of exporters, but I think that we will certainly hear from some of those companies if this strength continues much further in 2015. And basically, it's going to affect the earnings of some of those very successful autonomies on a medium-term basis. So one wants to just be a little bit careful there. Now, when I say that, I've been writing here. One of the things I've been writing on a little bit here today is the European situation, which is fraught with peril as far as the EU is concerned. The economies are still weak. You know the whole story on Europe. I don't need to review it all. But the European autonomies are very interesting plays. Yes, they have the handicap of the weak European region generally, but that's fully priced in. And they're doing very well. For instance, last month I bought BMW, And I think they take the German share, obviously. And I think Daimler is of a similar quality, very closely, very similar valuation as well. And these companies, with their overseas development branches, factories, sales, they remain hugely important global players. And their automobiles are justifiably just as popular today as they ever were. They're very extremely competitive. Yet BMW and Daimler sell at a fraction of some of the multiples and also yields that we see for retail or automobile companies in the United States. And therefore, I think that there are some very interesting opportunities in the European sector, but I would limit them to the autonomies overall. Okay, what else to mention in here? I think that looking at stock markets generally, you probably know that I own Royal Dutch Shell, which has regained about half of the decline that it saw off its high against the background of this big slide in the global crude oil price. Now, that obviously is a challenge for any major oil company. It's much greater, I think, for those U.S. frackers and other highly leveraged players. Royal Dutch Shell is still on a very inexpensive valuation. It's, in my opinion, probably the most interesting, particularly under its relatively new management, of the big integrated oil companies. It has this phenomenal project that I did write about not all that long ago, just a week or two ago, about its huge ship that's being completed, which is really a natural gas processor that's going to go out and be just off Australia as soon as it's completed. We'll see that happening this year. And instead of having to pipe natural gas over to processing centers, this huge ship is just going to sit on top of those wells and process right then and there on the ship, and then deliver the product to smaller tankers, which will come up alongside. It's the first company in the world to do this, and obviously a major leader in this field, and still yields over 5%. I'm going to hold on with some reservations. That being that, are we really going to see oil back up in the $80 to $90 level? Well, I think that's about a 50-50 possibility is the way I would describe it. But oil's got so many Shell's got so many interesting ventures on that I will certainly stay with it and think that they can hold the yield if they wish to. That's also as part of a discussion on the resources sectors here generally. I've been surprised that we've seen other big resources companies, two of which I own, and Rio Tinto and also the BHP Billiton. I've been surprised at their considerable underperformance. I think technology's played a big factor in all of that, making it easier to produce metals, not only for those two companies, but some of the other big producers. But again, they're cheap, their dividends are attractive, and unless one is very pessimistic about global GDP growth generally, and I'm not, I think we will continue to see this sort of mostly moderate progress with in terms of global GDP growth. And successful, well-managed companies are going to do a lot better than their respective economies in a number of instances. And I think that the miners are remain recovery candidates in here. And it'll be interesting because I have never seen, I cannot recall, a case where bull markets ended, and I don't think the bull markets are ending in stock markets at this time, but I cannot think of a time when bull markets ended without a major run-up in the latter stages or in the early process of the overall topping out phase for indices, when resources companies, being so highly cyclical, have not benefited enormously. Now, they obviously had a bad year in 2014. I regard that as another indication that the global bull market is not over in terms of major indices. And I think we also see that, of course, more importantly, from the actual chart action that we can see, not only for Wall Street, but so many other big important global stock markets, really from China to Japan to India. This strikes me as being a continuation of what is likely to be an overall favorable environment. Having expressed my concerns about Wall Street, I'll also just repeat that point that I've made in a lot of audios recently, that the third year of the presidential election cycle is historically very attractive for Wall Street. And if Wall Street just gets a moderate gain, why might it not get more than a moderate gain? Well, valuations would be one factor. The strong performances that we've already seen, but if Wall Street does just get at least a moderate gain this year, which is what I expect, that will be very favorable given Wall Street's long reach in terms of influence for many other stock markets around the world, which have not appreciated as rapidly, or where the economic growth has not picked up to the extent that we've actually seen in the United States. China, excuse me, China is an extremely good example of that. So, overall, I think as far as 200 and 2015 is concerned, it's not a year that I view with fear, although there are always risks. It's a year that at this stage I view or I remain somewhat optimistic about for stock markets. I think we should be psychologically prepared for volatility. You may feel and say that volatility is an ever-present a factor of global stock market activity, and I think that's largely true overall. When you get just a very, very persistent multi-month trend, as we see from time to time, those are the exceptions rather than the rules. Do the more choppy action that we saw, for instance, on Wall Street and some other markets in October and also in December, does that make it more or less likely that we will see more volatility in 2015? Well, a lot of people feel that it makes it more likely, And I just would say I'm a bit of an agnostic on that, but psychologically, I think we want to be prepared for it. I'll repeat that point. And while I'm largely fully invested, and of course dividends gradually build up, and I let this build up for opportunities when we see setbacks in markets. And I think that's an approach that I will definitely, I know I will definitely continue to use in 2015. And it's one that I think generally makes sense overall. I think that the risks are getting carried away with something that's doing very well and paying too high a price or holding on too long in something that's accelerating higher. We've all done that. And you do pay a medium-term price because anything that accelerates up very strongly gets a sharp reaction and long consolidation. So I think with that in mind, a good overall strategy for 2015 and well beyond is to just when you do see have the good fortune of seeing, as you will, some of your positions just becoming very fashionable, clearly becoming overextended relative to their rising 200-day moving averages. That's probably not a sign that one should abandon ship with that position quickly, but it might be a good idea to introduce a trailing sell stop order, or to what I would actually prefer, particularly in volatile conditions, is to scale up sell quite lightly on a rally, on the strength when it is clearly getting overextended. And if you lighten up a little bit and then we get a medium-term correction, then you have the opportunity to buy back again, replace those positions. Well, forgive me if these are just obvious tactics that you're all very well familiar with, but I think they're tactics that will help us here going forward in 2015 and beyond. And I think that the one of the biggest and most controversial points that I've made in recent years regarding stock markets is that I've talked about Wall Street experiencing another secular bull market. And I was talking about that shortly after the 2000 and important 2008, 2009 lows. And people think that's madness because, you know, they saw 2000 and what happened in 2000, 2001, and they saw 2008, 2009, and then think that disaster lies right around the next corner. You might recall me saying, did those two situations, huge bear markets, did that make it more or less likely that we would see a third one anytime soon? Well, I said it made it less likely, because you get management tightening the belt, you get investors becoming more conservative, not least in terms of leverage, and that helps to fuel the next run to the upside. Well, okay. I think that the factors contributing to a secular bull market on Wall Street, accelerating rate of technological innovation, that's the really big one. Lower prices of crude oil in real terms, that's another big one. And I think those two factors will apply. Again, the strength of an overall advantage of autonomies, that's another big one. Increasing global population, growth of middle classes, those are all bullish long-term factors, in my opinion. What we do have to remember about secular bull markets, and what the big one came shortly after World War II, carrying on into the 1960s. Then, of course, the next one, which many of you will remember, starting in 1982, and really ending with the end of the last century. And I think that we're in the early foothills of another secular bull market capable of running for another couple of decades, led by the factors that I just mentioned, of which the accelerating rate of technological innovation is by far the most significant. For instance, if it were not for that, we wouldn't have a lower oil price that we're seeing in here today. It's just one example. And corporations will benefit from the technological innovation as much as any other sector. Corporations do best of all out of the technological innovation, in my opinion, although we all benefit. So I think those are the key bull factors. But what we do have to remember is that even within secular bull markets, you get overextended periods and you get some cyclical bear markets. For instance, remember 1987. That was definitely a very frightening bear market at the time. You look at it in a long-term chart today, and it wasn't that big a deal, and it didn't last very long. But it was very terrifying to live through. We have to prepare ourselves psychologically for that prospect, although I certainly don't think that it's imminent in here. We don't see the overextended feeding frenzy that we saw prior to that 1987 crash, but we probably will at some stage down the road. And hopefully we all spot it and talk about it. Certainly Owen and I will be keeping our mind on the job and looking for that. But we'll have plenty of medium-term setbacks and corrections and so on along the way. And those are the buying opportunities. Buy on some of the bigger setbacks and lighten when things get overheated on the upside. Okay, what about these government bonds? Well, it's because it's an extraordinary situation, and that U.S. 10-year yield is down to 2.11 in here today. And we see European bond yields incredibly low. Investors are actually paying Germany here to just have them hold their money. Well, this is an extraordinary situation. I think it does not suggest that we're going to have some sort of sorry, I've just got a okay. Sorry, I just had a little glitch there. I hit a keyboard accidentally on my computer, and it was asking me if I wanted to stop the recording. No, not yet. I would. I'm very surprised that bond yields have gone as low as they actually have. Markets are full of surprises, but earlier last year, I thought there were very good reasons why we might see yields pushing back up sooner, rather than later. And not only has it not happened yet, they've actually come down lower. I think that that probably extends the life of the equity bull markets, unless you feel that it's a sign that we are going to see very much global Japanization J or Japanization in terms of economic prospects, meaning a very long deflationary, disinflationary crunch. Well, everybody's pointed out that Europe is a potential candidate for that. Mario Draghi's trying to combat that, but it's a real risk in Europe. Is it for the global economy overall? I doubt it. I doubt it very much. And there's certainly plenty of monetary stimulus going on, and that risk is so well known that steps have been are being taken to avoid it, although not in Europe, except on the part of Mario Draghi at the ECB. So I think that yes, the technological developments that we see have a disinflationary or add to the disinflationary pressures that we see. So does globalization. It tends to level out the playing field. That creates more deflationary pressures for developed economies than we would have seen a decade or two ago. But my own view is that the global economy is going to continue the recovery that we've seen in the US and we've seen in the UK. And I think the stimulus that's taking place will also support China's recovery, ditto in Japan. Doesn't happen overnight, obviously, after a long disinflationary period, but at least it's being addressed successfully. I think India's growth is going to continue to pick up. So I'm not overly concerned about that big disinflationary deflationary concern that that some people have mentioned. I don't want to be complacent about it, but I just feel that probably the low bond yields are more good news than bad news, particularly for stock market investors at this stage. And they may well also the low bond yields may also cause central banks to keep interest rates lower for longer. Inevitably, we are going to see inflationary pressures build up at some point. But I am not going to try to make a guess as to when that's actually going to occur. But we will certainly see evidence of it, not only in the chart action, but well, I think we'll certainly get the earliest evidence of it in the chart action, but not while inflation is still falling generally, not while bond yields are remaining extraordinarily low, and not while the commodity indices, that's been another big surprise, are staying remarkably low. Personally, I know there are many subscribers who know a great deal more about bond markets than I do, but personally, I think that equity markets offer by far the more interesting longer-term opportunities than relative to bonds. Okay, what about currencies? Well, the dollar move is extremely interesting. It'll create some winners and losers that I've already mentioned. It will pressure the earnings of U.S. autonomies, and at some ex and but the biggest risks, I think, are with any countries that have borrowed too heavily in U.S. dollars while the dollar was still weak, and have dollar debts which are becoming more expensive for them, and that is likely to be a problem going forward. But I don't think it'll be anything near the problem that we actually saw in, for instance, that 1997, 1990, 98 period. But it is a risk to look out for. We get some extraordinary volatility when governance is very poor, or economic circumstances suffer. We're seeing that certainly with the primarily commodity producing economies. Russia's a classic example overall, and one that I should spend a little bit more time on, because the key question on my mind here regarding Russia is this going to somehow cause Putin to become more moderate or less aggressive, become more of a multinational member of the, or acceptable multinational, or acceptable member, I should say, of the multinational community? Well, that would be a very nice development if that were the case in terms of the personality and history of Putin. I think that's extremely unlikely, as I've said and written on many occasions overall. Does he lash out, which is the more dangerous extreme and the more likely risk? I think there's a possibility of that. Does he get replaced? Yes, definitely, but will it be sooner rather than later? These are questions that none of us can answer at this stage. I hope it's sooner rather than later. And what is that man's name? The opposition leader who's under some political pressure from Navalny. I'm probably pronouncing that incorrectly, but I've written about him, and you can there are articles on the site of course on the web. But what Russia really needs is a moderate, sensible, economically savvy leader to follow Putin. Hopefully that happens sooner rather than later. But I'm not holding my breath at this stage. So that's a risk that continues to hang over Europe, and indeed beyond, that we have to contend with. And again, there are always things to worry about, as we all know. I got onto that because I was talking about currencies and saying wherever governance is poor, or where economies find themselves extremely vulnerable, whether it's due to errors of governance or just too much of a concentration in any particular sector, such as resources, and that will lead to a sharp weakening of those as currencies, as we've already seen. That's an obvious point here overall. But I'm probably less worried about extreme currency volatility than a number of other factors, and I just say that in the context that I'm not overly worried. I'm actually quite hopeful. I think there are far more good things to talk about that I have been talking about, rather than big fears to cause us to come out of equities and hide in bolt holes. I don't think that's necessary at this stage. What about these commodity markets overall? Well, I'm surprised to have seen the cumulative commodity index, for instance, fall so low as it has had this year. It has some advantages. Clearly, it's not inflationary. The world, or a good chunk of the world, benefits when resources, major resources, cost less. Oil's the big one here right now. That's a net major bull point for most economies, and obviously the ones that have to import most of their energy overall. I've often mentioned India's the biggest major beneficiary of this, but the world in general benefits from this, with the exception of the oil exporting countries overall. I think this is a situation that's going to persist, this low oil price, for the medium term, meaning at least the next several months overall. And is this the last gamble here on the part of Saudi Arabia to try to regain control of both OPEC and the oil market? Well, quite possibly. I think it's going to fail. And the main reason why it's going to fail is because technology is enabling other sources of energy to become more prevalent, not least the actual shale that we see. And I think that the US is going to dig in here, is digging in here. They posted an article, it was a couple of days ago here, talking about the likelihood that the Obama administration was quietly changing the laws, which would allow the US to export more oil in starting this year and starting quite soon. So, and when I mentioned this a couple of days ago, I also said that meant that I might have to adjust my own expectations on the crude oil price a little bit lower. I talked about the $50 range using Brent as the benchmark on that, and I think certainly we're going to see some further inroads into 50 on the part of Brent, and I think it's put it this way, it's too soon to be thinking in terms of a major recovery. When it does look more likely that we will see a major recovery, I'll want to have a long, a speculative long position there in crude oil, maybe increase my position in Shell. But meanwhile, I think that there's likely to be further pressure on the downside, and that will cause some major disruptions, not only in Russia, as we're already seeing, Venezuela and other energy producers. It'll bankrupt some of the shale producers in the U.S. that are smaller and more leveraged. But most of the world benefits from this move overall. We're getting a less dramatic version for the most part in industrial metal prices as well that we're seeing. And again, technology is a major factor factor contributing to that. The net effect on all this, though, is that consumers of these metals benefit, and also that inflationary pressures stay low. In terms of precious metals, it's been a tough time for precious metals generally. They faced a lot of competition from stock markets and also global bond markets. That's still the case today. On the other hand, the valuations are lower, which makes them more interesting to many investors, particularly historic investors. I'm thinking of the Indians, for instance, also the Chinese. Chinese investors have been moving into, gradually moving into somewhat larger gold holding positions. I think we'll see that continue overall. We also know that the U.S. institutions, some of the big investment banks, and so on, are trying to get the oil, get the gold price down to lower levels. Will they succeed? Well, I think we'll see a choppy, interesting year in these prices. It would be too soon to say that they have bottomed, but there's probably less downside risk over the lengthy medium term than upside recovery potential. In my position, and in my opinion, rather, And my positions are small in these markets, but I'm going to continue to trade them here in 2015, looking to buy low and to lighten on the rallies. I'll be a little bit more active than I have been over the last year. Okay, what about agricultural commodities? Well, that's a weather punt. And so far, the weather has been beneficial this year more often than not. There are inevitably exceptions. Coffee's one of them. But the staple grains, beans, prices are favorably low in terms of global consumption. And that's good news. Net it all out. More good news than bad news. I expect reasonable performance by stock markets. And despite a somewhat choppy environment, more likely than not. And I think we're going to have another good money-making year. And whether you agree or disagree, don't forget our seminar on the 12th at the East India Club in St. James Square, London. If you're anywhere near, come on along. We've got a few seats left. And on that note, again, as I started, Happy New Year and all the very best to all of you.